the biggest value of NDEs is instructing us in how to live this life, how to make choices more out of love for self and others, and not so much out of fear and kind of lack of abundance, which is what tends to be the dominant background of our culture.
There's a spiritual nature of communication that is a higher level of understanding that even just at face value, the way that you have interpreted it, I mean, it just seems like there's a higher level meaning there.
Welcome to Contemplating the Cosmos. Today I have special guest Dr. Eben Alexander. Dr. Alexander is very well known in his near-death experience. It is an honor and a privilege to have him as a guest on our show today. So stay tuned as we get in deep and continue contemplating the cosmos.
Thanks everybody for joining me. This is Charlie with Contemplating the Cosmos. I have an amazing guest today, Dr. Eben Alexander. This is one of those things where I've been researching near-death experiences for several years now. My mom had a near-death experience. My stepbrother had an out-of-body experience. It's always been an intriguing topic to me. I didn't really get full-fledged into it until a couple years ago, trying to do some investigation of my own. And I like to hear a lot of different perspectives when it comes to near-death experience, because I've kind of seen a lot of interpretations, a lot of variables, things that factor into the specifics of the near-death experience that an individual's having. Sometimes it's just applicable to them. Sometimes it's applicable to a situation that they're part of. There's all kinds of different ways to look at it. And the reason I had you on today, Dr. Alexander, is I wanted to get a little perspective coming from your point of view. And, you know, I'll just kind of preface right now that I have kind of a worldview coming from a Christian background. I was raised into a Christian church, and now I've kind of ventured into other areas of research, I guess, in the last several years, kind of being more open-minded to other philosophies and interpretations and things like that. So I'd like to basically give you a forum just to kind of briefly touch on some of the things that you're most interested in, and maybe even touch a little bit on your experience. And the floor is yours.
Okay, well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. I think it's important to point out, for those who, you know, don't know anything about me, that I was raised in a family in North Carolina. My father was very influential in my upbringing, and he was an academic neurosurgeon, and he had spent almost 2 years abroad during World War II as a combat surgeon in the Pacific Theater, and I'm convinced that it was his strong belief in God that was instilled in him by his own father, a general surgeon in Eastern Tennessee, who took him to that Presbyterian church every Sunday of his life. And so for my father, even though he was well aware of modern science, cosmology, physics, he had such a strong belief in God and power of prayer that there was plenty of room for both his spiritual beliefs and his scientific knowledge. And he also headed up a neurosurgical training program. So he was a globally renowned neurosurgeon and tremendous scientist. But, you know, I, like many in our current world, I grew up in the 60s, and that was a period, kind of a heyday of scientific materialism, and I grew up knowing that science is a pathway to truth. Yeah. And then I will say that during my years, I spent 15 years teaching at Harvard Medical School, at the Brigham Women's Hospital and Children's Hospital, thinking I had some idea of how brain, mind, and consciousness work, and then everything got turned upside down. November 10th of 2008, that's when I woke up 4:30 in the morning with severe back pain. Soon realized I had a horrific headache, and then grand mal seizures, and I was gone from this world for 7 days. Luckily, there's a medical review of my case now available on the. People can find it at evanalexander.com. In my blog postings for September of 2018, I talk about how The medical review validates my case. But the important thing is those three physicians who were not involved in my care were very astonished, as I was, by my recovery. And that's the piece that really demands some explanation, because when you go through my medical records, it's quite clear that this was a case of severe meningoencephalitis, bacterial, gram-negative, all the bad ingredients you can have, that absolutely should have killed me. And my own doctors estimated I went from a 10% chance of survival when I first went into coma down to a 2% chance on day 7 when I finally started to come back to this world. But no chance of recovery. That was their expectation. And so in to even get this case report published in the Journal of Nervous and Mental Diseases in September 2018, those physicians had to come up with a supposition for why in the world I had this recovery that goes beyond any kind of Western medical explanation. And in a peer-reviewed medical journal, their answer was, because of the spiritual content of the NDE, I benefited from this miraculous recovery. And that's an astonishing statement, and yet we see it in near-death experiences not uncommonly. Now to get back to my journey, now that I've prefaced it by saying I shouldn't have had any experience at all according to modern neuroscience.
Yes.
And I certainly shouldn't be able to sit here and talk with you and get more than two words strung together because of the damage to my brain. But now absolutely. I want to share with you what did happen, because it's what violates all of our suppositions about brain-mind-consciousness, but also, given my full recovery, outlines the importance of our kind of spiritual awareness that leads to healing. And that's really the big lesson. So, that early morning, I went to grand mal seizures. I was taken to the emergency room. I was already deep in coma. I remember none of this whatsoever. And that's where they decided to do a lumbar puncture, diagnosed the meningoencephalitis, and then over the next few days, they had all the evidence from my neurologic exams that my neocortex, the part of the brain that makes us human, was inactivated. It was completely decimated by this illness.
So they did some, I apologize for the interruption, but was there like neural scans that they did on your brain to kind of show the activity?
The most important thing are the neurologic exams, and there's something called a Glasgow Coma Scale. And that scale, and you or me right now, you would get a 15. If we were dead, a corpse, we would only get a 3. Anything below 9 is deep coma. And although when I first hit that emergency room, my GCS was 11, I very rapidly went down into the kind of 6 and 7 range, which is where I spent most of the week. So I was in deep coma almost the entire time. And that, of course, is the most important information, the neurologic exams. But they also had other information. For example, the CSF glucose, the sugar level in my spinal fluid. Normally, in any of us, it would be 60 to 80. In somebody with a severe meningitis, it might be as low as 20. In my case, it went all the way down to 1. None of the consultants had ever heard of a CSF glucose that low in a case of meningitis. So in other words, they had lots of evidence that my brain was horribly damaged. Those GCS scores tell you that my neocortex was badly impacted by this. In fact, my brainstem was impacted early on. And that, I think, is the crucial thing, plus the CT and MRI scans that showed that all 8 lobes of my brain were affected. There was no region that was relatively unscathed. So there was really no place in my neocortex to support any kind of an experience, and yet I had the most ultra-real experience I've ever had in my existence. It was much more real than this world. People often think, well, that NDEs must be dreamlike. Well, no, they're not. They're much more real than this world. This world is dreamlike. But my experience, to get to the nuts and bolts of it all, it started in what I call the earthworm's eye view, a very primitive, coarse, unresponsive realm. And important to point out that one of the unusual features of my near-death experience is that I was amnesic. I had no memory whatsoever for the life of Eben Alexander. I had no words, no language, no knowledge of this universe, of humans, of planet Earth. Every bit of it was gone, an empty slate. Hmm. And in retrospect, I think that empty slate was necessary for me to glean some of the deeper lessons. And of course, initially, when I came back to this world, my brain was wrecked. In fact, when I woke up in the ICU, I did not even recognize loved ones at the bedside, my mother, my sisters, wow. my sons. I had no idea who they were. My brain was so wrecked and my amnesia was ongoing. But of wow. course, the bigger mystery over time has been, how did I have a full recovery of all my memories from life over about 2 months, to a point where I realized they were even more perfect and complete than they had been before my coma. And this tells us something very interesting about memory, how it doesn't even seem to be stored in the brain. This is all stuff that we discuss in our newest book, Living in a Mindful Universe, co-written with my partner, Karen Newell. But the upshot of it was, the picture here is of a very devastating brain illness that should have obliterated any kind of hallucination, dream, or drug effect because of the damage to the neocortex. Those who understand neuroscience realize that the picture, my clinical picture at that time, would not enable any kind of experience. And that is kind of the big shocker. And of course, when you bundle that with this complete recovery, you realize we have a case that is of interest to teach us something about healing. But getting back to my experience, it started in this very primitive coarse realm that I call the earthworm's eye view. It was like being in dirty jello. I have a strong memory of roots or blood vessels all around me. And I'm sure I had no memory moment to moment, so it seemed to be lasting forever. But luckily it didn't. There came a slowly spinning white light with pure kind of silvery and golden tendrils off the sides. And as this white light came slowly rotating towards me out of the darkness, it came packaged with a perfect musical melody. And that is very important, because music, vibration, frequency, we often bring memories back of incredible hymns, chants, and all of that. And yet you've got to remember, we're not hearing with the ears. We're not seeing with the eyes. And the brain is not doing its normal filtering mechanism. So it's in those realms, it's like drinking from a fire hose. I mean, it's this incredible onrush of consciousness. Yeah. And in fact, at points in this journey that I'm going to describe, I would even become huge swathes of the scene before me. It's what I call knowledge through identification. And it's one of the reasons why it's so difficult to come back and tell these stories, because our language is great for talking about Disney World.
I always hear the description is as ineffable. That's always the description I get from people who had near-death experiences.
And that's because the mode of knowing there is very different from our mode of knowing in these physical bodies. But anyway, so this slowly circling white light with the musical melody opened up like a rip in the fabric of that ugly earthworm eye view, and it led me up into this brilliant gateway valley that was filled with kind of perfection. I mean, there was no sign of death or decay. There was a tremendous amount of plant life around, but it was all lush and fertile and growing. I remember buds on trees and blossoms, flowers, just this incredible beauty of these sparkling waterfalls into crystal blue pools. And in this lush, verdant meadow down below were thousands of beings that were dancing, lots of joy and merriment. And when I wrote it all up weeks later, trying to explain all this and just record my journey for my own use, I basically described them as souls between lives, that they were in that realm kind of on a temporary basis. That was something that was very apparent to me at the time. And I was a speck of awareness on a butterfly wing. I never at any point in this journey did I have any kind of body awareness at all. And again, remember, I had no memory whatsoever of anything about being human or this earth or universe. And so in that beautiful gateway valley, with all this joy and merriment going on below, I was witnessing it because I had a companion on the butterfly wing, this beautiful young woman with sparkling blue eyes and high cheekbones, broad smile, high forehead, soft brown hair framing her beautiful face. And she looked at me. She never said a word, but she didn't have to. Her message came through loud and clear as this beautiful kind of deep emotional truth from her inner being. And I think for me, it's the central message that I was to bring back, you know, and share. And that is, you are deeply loved and cherished forever. You have nothing to fear. You will be taken care of. And it was the most refreshing and liberating kind of awareness, given all my confusion up to that point. And I remember on that butterfly wing, my first kind of impression of the power of the divine, of that God force that completely rules all these realms and is responsible for co-creating reality with us. I remember that as a soft summer breeze. As I was on this butterfly wing, I called it my early writings, the breath of God. And it was this breeze that blew through, and all of a sudden my awareness shifted entirely. And I realized the power of that infinite loving force of that of God all through that realm. And not only that, but deeply influencing our four-dimensional space-time in these denser, more material realms. And that was a refreshing kind of awareness that I cannot put into words. I mean, a soft summer breeze sounds innocuous enough, but it was a complete revolution in my understanding of how that world and really all these different realms work. Now, it turns out that all the joy and festivity that I was witnessing below, all this dancing and children playing and dogs jumping, was being fueled because up above were these swooping orbs of pure kind of spiritual beings that in my early writings, when I came back to this world, I called angelic choirs. And they were emanating chants and anthems and hymns that would just thunder through my awareness. This is pounding kind of incorporation into this incredible integration of all that was going on around me. And I remember that, in fact, those angelic choirs provided yet another musical portal. Just like that spinning melody in the Earth Were My View, these angelic choirs provided a portal to higher and higher levels. I remember seeing all of four-dimensional space-time collapsing down. Then all of that spiritual realm, including Gateway Valley, which is the place where we would, for example, reunite with our higher soul, reunite with soul groups, go through planning next incarnations, all that kind of thing would happen in that realm. And yet now I was moving on to higher and higher levels. And through the portal that was provided through those angelic choirs, I went all the way out to what I call the core. Core, infinite inky blackness, but filled to overflowing with this divine love of the Creator. And it was the most kind of at home. I mean, it's our spiritual home, and it's and more engaged in our being than this material realm. This material realm, you're more like a stranger in a strange land. In that realm, you are absolutely at home. And that's, of course, beyond the realms where we reunite with souls of departed loved ones and soul group and all that kind of thing. So in that core realm, I saw all of higher dimensional space-time collapse down as what I call this oversphere. And so when I say it was overflowing with the power of that unconditional love, you can imagine what that means, given that the entire multiverse throughout all of eternity was this tiny little thing in comparison to that God force of pure love. And not only that, I was aware of becoming one with that force. There was this brilliant orb of light that initially I thought was an interpreter or translator to help me to communicate with that divine being of infinite healing love force. And yet there were times where I felt identical with it, as if that force is the very source of our conscious awareness. And I came away from it with a very different kind of view of consciousness and of God, that is much more one where we are one with that force. And of course, that's infinitely far from the notion of our ego, our little ego and our little kind of identification with this body and this identity in this material world is not what can resonate so fully with that God force, but it's really kind of our higher soul, the aspect of us that can see the win-win and can see how love benefits all and is always the best answer. And from that point of view, we start to become one with that higher soul, which merges directly into that ultimate source. And so in this core realm, although I was, you know, nothing was conveyed in words, it was all in pure thought and awareness. And when I wrote those words down, coming back to this world, I made it apparent that, you know, every time I entered that core realm, because it did happen several times, I was told I was not there to stay, that I would be taught many things. And then it was so much of this knowledge through representation. And there were incredible visions there. For example, the way that I saw something like life reviews, you know, the life review, yeah. Your life flashing before your eyes, is described in 25 to 50% of NDEs.
Yep.
But I had no memory of Evan Alexander's life. So in fact, the way I saw life reviews was in two very profound visions. One is something that was very similar to what is known as Indra's net, which is basically the network of interaction of sentient beings through multiple lifetimes. And I could see the weave of this beautiful net showing our progression as souls towards oneness with the divine. So it's a different notion of reincarnation that comes out of the NDE world and out of my experience than, for example, in some religious traditions, where it's this endless cycle of suffering where you're then supposed to get off that cycle. Whereas, in fact, what I saw was a beautiful vision of how all this is interwoven, leading towards this this golden center of divine consciousness, of oneness with the divine, kind of along the lines of Pierre Teilhard de Chardin's view in Phenomenon of Man, where he expanded in the mid-20th century on notions of evolution and said, well, what's actually evolving is not just simple little biological systems on Earth, but that all of consciousness is in the process of evolving. And that's how I saw this kind of Indra's net vision of reincarnation and life reviews and all that. The other very powerful vision adjacent to that core realm was a flying fish. The fish going into the murky water, we're, you know, in the material realm, dumbed down. We don't have the knowledge of our higher souls. Is those who study past life memories in children, like the group at University of Virginia Division of Perceptual Studies, who have studied more than 2,500 cases over the last six decades, suggestive of reincarnation. What they tell you is you need to harvest those memories before the child is five or six, because they're natural phenomena. Just like we don't remember our dreams, even though we know dreams are important, likewise, we're not meant to remember between lives and past lives throughout all of this life. And that's why those memories get buried. And yet there's this whole emerging science of transpersonal psychology. It's come up in the last 30 or 40 years, thanks to the work of Stan Grof, Michael Newton, Brian Weiss, and others, that indicate that you can best make sense of the issues and challenges that face somebody in this life when you recognize that they've lived previous lifetimes. And this is absolutely essential to making any kind of sense of our journey here on this earth and of all the challenges and hardships we see.
So, you know, I'm writing down my questions, because I'm there's a lot of things that I want to address as far as perspective. I mean, my YouTube channel is called 4BZ Truth. My last name is Forbes, so it's just a little acronym, basically, 4BZ Truth. Now, I'm really drawn into the concept of truth, because really it can seem subjective, you know, depending on the position you're coming from. Now, in regards to your experience, kind of reminded me of the myth of Ur. So, like, they come up into this area where they separate, and then they end up in this valley where they're basically intermingling with each other. And it just reminded me of that. I don't know if I'm sure you've looked into the myth of Ur.
I have. I'm familiar with that. I mean, I think when you look at NDEs broadly, you find that that kind of landscape quite commonly. And it is independent of culture, religious beliefs. You know, I think there's a lot of commonality in NDEs that really shows we need to revise kind of our religious views, because in fact, the deepest mystical traditions of all the great faiths are very much in agreement. And it's only when you get out into the kind of details of orthodoxies presented to the masses that you start finding these various kind of conflicts. And from my point of view, those are very misleading, and that in fact, there are ways that we can see forward to much more robustly consolidate kind of our religious and spiritual beliefs into a system that's aligned with the commonality revealed through near-death experiences.
Yeah. So I kind of liken kind of this awareness to like a great awakening or the enlightenment that we were looking forward to in the Christian perspective. You know, in the last days, people will gain more knowledge, and then others will actually just fall away and go fast asleep. So there's like a division that's happening between people. There's a separation from sheep and goats, so to speak. And I do see patterns of faiths, and as I started venturing outside of my box, so to speak, I started noticing the patterns. And I've been kind of researching more about like mythology lately, trying to understand like Plato, the myth of Ur, and even just the symbology that you see in all kinds of religions. And I started seeing symbology in near-death experiences. And that was actually one area that I really wanted to focus on lately, because this is kind of the next addition to my Patterns of a Reality series. Basically, getting into near-death experiences and contrasting mythology and symbology. And I thought of you because I was thinking about like some of the patterns that I see in your near-death experience that remind me of symbology or things that were identified to you in the form that you can understand, but at the same time, there's a spiritual nature of communication that is a higher level of understanding that even just at face value, the way that you have interpreted it, it just seems like there's a higher level meaning there. And that's one of the things that I am really trying to contrast lately is the higher level meaning and the fact that you were having, you know, this awareness. Just real quick on the topic of reincarnation, and we can actually get into the rest of your experience, but reincarnation, you know, I was kind of closed off to that for a long time. And, after having discussions with other experiencers, like this concept of the eternal now, right? I don't know if, you know, time is really just a viewing lens that we actually interpret reality through.
Right.
And so if time isn't really what it is, what we think it is, or maybe time is just our template of understanding. So reincarnation to me, and you're talking about this net, kind of reminds me of you receiving other people's experiences and, not necessarily meaning that it's not you, like having a previous experience.
Right.
So it's almost like maybe that net is really just the eternal now. It's everything that's simultaneously happened now. You know what I'm saying?
I would say that's a good way to look at it. The only problem is, of course, most of us in our bodies tend to kind of get focused into a now here that makes it difficult for us to imagine simultaneous nows occurring in other times and spaces. And yet, essentially, that's what the life review shows us beautifully. I mean, a life review is very complete. You talk to people who have had them. And plus, it's the interesting thing about life review is people often describe it as you experience how your actions and even thoughts impact others. So you experience it kind of from the viewpoint of others. So not necessarily just from yourself, but you can feel the pain and suffering, for example, that you might have caused other with some of your actions.
Yeah.
You feel that during the life review, not as empathy for them, but as they felt it. And so I would say life reviews in many ways show us two very powerful things about reality. One is that our sense of self in many ways is part of the fiction that supports our growth, our learning and teaching in this world. But when we hurt another, we are truly hurting ourselves. It's like the life review is the golden rule, you know, treat others as you'd like to be treated, written into the fabric of the universe. And the other thing about life reviews that they show us is they're so crisp and sharp and complete about the various events, and yet they can happen like that. You know, if somebody loses consciousness in a cardiac arrest, for 2 or 3 minutes, they can have a very complete life review and then be brought back to this world. So it's showing us that our very concept of time, in many ways, is part of the stage setting in the material world to allow this drama to unfold. But that's why I label something very specifically different called deep time, which is more of an ordering in the spiritual realms of kind of the progression of souls and the evolution of consciousness itself. And that, although there's a rough parallel between deep time and earth time, earth time is really a much smaller a kind of subset that's just used to allow human beings to exist in these material bodies in the material realm, and learn and teach the lessons that they're here to learn and teach.
Yeah, this reminds me of DMT, dimethyltryptamine. Basically, a lot of experiencers that actually take it as a substance or to have a, some trip or something. Basically, they will be gone for 15 seconds or 15 minutes, and it literally is like a lifetime coming back. And they're explaining. Now, I'm not dismissing the concept of a DMT experience as, being like a NDE, being kind of a trip, so to speak. But I'm looking at it like it's linked to a similar kind of experience. Like there's a DMT release in the brain when someone's dying, if I understand correctly. And I think that maybe as a neuroscientist, you would understand a little more about DMT than I would, to be honest. So
yeah, I can make a few comments about that. I mean, people, yeah. It's one of the hypotheses I entertained in the appendix of Proof of Heaven. Because, of course, a lot of people were saying, well, it sounded like you had a DMT experience. Well, I think there's a tremendous amount of kind of overlap between what we would call our dream space, the realms that we encounter in dreams, and also in the realms encountered in psychedelic drug experiences. So I think there's a lot of overlap, and especially NDEs. From my point of view, NDEs would be kind of the tip of the spear. They're really the purest and most robust form of interaction with that spiritual realm. But I believe we come to a close approximation of it when we learn to manage dreams, and also I think psychedelics. Yeah. Now, important to point out, psychedelics, luckily, are now being viewed as therapeutic agents and are showing tremendous possibility. For example, psilocybin in experiments done at Johns Hopkins at NYU, psilocybin is showing tremendous potential to help eradicate the fear of death in cancer patients. One dose can be effective for 6 to 12 months. I mean, it's astonishing. In the proper therapeutic setting, I'm not talking about casual recreational use, but in a proper therapeutic setting, magic mushrooms can be very powerful to help in that fear. Likewise, they've been used in treating severe addictions. Nicotine, which is one of the toughest addictions in the world, opiates, alcoholism. And I would say that psilocybin is doing this by basically helping to open the channels to our higher soul. That's essentially what an NDE does. And I believe similar things can be done through psychedelics. Now, my partner and co-author, Karen Newell, and I wrote a book, Living in a Mindful Universe, which I just so happen to have here.
Yeah.
In that book, we talk a lot about use of what's called sacred acoustics, binaural beat, differential frequency sound for brain entrainment, which I use an hour to a day for meditation. And there are reasons why we think that this can be a very powerful tool that would even replace those psychedelics in accomplishing the same kind of goals. And for example, we just recently had a pilot study using sacred acoustics that was in a psychiatric practice in New York City. Dr. Anna Usim, Y-U-S-I-M, she wrote a beautiful book on spirituality and psychiatry called Fulfilled. I highly recommend that book. But Karen and I participated with Dr. Usim, and Dr. Usim wrote up a study where she found that 26% of her patients who presented to her busy New York City psychiatric practice with anxiety, depression, some with suicidal ideation, that these kind of things were improved dramatically over 2 weeks by 26% in people who were also listening to the sacred acoustics tones. And these are tones that have an influence in the lower brainstem, and I think that's why they are so powerful at allowing us to generate transcendental states of conscious awareness. But I believe that all this work with psychedelics showing kind of this ability of higher soul to help guide us into a therapeutic motif, especially in facing addiction and fear of death and things like that, I think it's very, very powerful. And the other point I'd like to make about psychedelics that a lot of people don't understand, but it's astonishing. And this is as revealed through several recent scientific papers. And the first of these papers I was aware of came from Robin Carhart Harris in Imperial College London, and is listed in the bibliography of Proof of Heaven, even though the textual references to it were stripped out by editors in that book. But Karen and I talk about it a lot in Living in a Mindful Universe, and especially the fact that the modern studies show with functional MRI, magnetoencephalography, other ways of looking at the brain activity very specifically, that under the influence of things like psilocybin, as shown in 2012, and then more recently a paper from Brazil using functional MRI looking at dimethyltryptamine, the active principle in ayahuasca that you mentioned a minute ago, and more recently the Imperial College in London group also putting out a paper on LSD, which is the most powerful such serotonergic psychedelic drug, and they all find the same thing. The brain goes dark. You know, for anyone who's ever been under the influence of those drugs, you think, well, the brain must be lighting up like a Christmas tree.
Yeah.
All this incredible mental phenomenal experience you're having. No, the brain is getting out of the way. The brain is not generating those experiences. Consciousness is the realm where all that happens, and the brain is going dark to allow it. So just one beautiful example of how science can be very useful at assessing some of these deep spiritual questions. When you find the brain is not generating that, that helps us to realize we need to dig much deeper to come up with explanations.
Yeah, you know, you were explaining that you had a guide with you, and it kind of makes me think about, like, when you're having a near-death experience, you know, in my view, you're probably having a similar reaction like a DMT trip in the brain or whatever. I use the word trip because that's the word. As far as the...
But remember that just like in all those psychedelic studies, you can talk about DMT till the cows come home, but ultimately all that you're witnessing and all the causality of it is beyond the material realm. It's not being caused by DMT. That's one of the biggest mistakes people make. Even though you may find a big explosion of DMT in the brain, that doesn't mean that that is what's causing the experience. Gotcha.
Yeah, so when you say the brain goes dark, you know, it's interesting to me that, so as far as the guide, it kind of makes me think that in an NDE, it's kind of more harnessed to help you understand things that are more coherent. But when it comes to LSD or something, it's not always as coherent, or maybe you have a bad trip or something like that.
Right. I would say the other thing I would add to that is I believe that the kind of chemical splash, the kind of effect of those drugs, there's so much noise around the whole thing. It's very difficult to discern signal. And that's why the sound, sacred acoustics, can be a far more powerful tool, because it's a much gentler way of bringing us in across the veil into contact with that spiritual realm. And in fact, there's a book that addresses exactly this topic of using binaural beat differential frequency brain entrainment for enhancing spiritual experiences versus high dose LSD. And that book is called Dark Night, Early Dawn. It's by a colleague of mine, Dr. Christopher Bache, B-A-C-H-E. It's a beautiful book. And in that book, he describes his efforts with both high-dose LSD and with differential frequency sound to get to various spiritual truths, and actually concludes that in many ways you can get deeper and farther in these explorations with a steady application of sound, that is a regular practice of meditation using something like sacred acoustics, than you can with a high-dose LSD. And I think that's a very important statement, and something people need to realize is there are non-pharmacological ways of getting the same kind of benefits that in many ways can be more kind of organized and orderly and allow us to bring richer lessons and truths back to this world.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Like, I'm starting to see patterns of brain capability within this body that we're in. Like, each person is given a certain level of understanding, and so if consciousness is transcendent and our brain really is the limitation to our understanding of reality, it kind of makes me wonder, you know, about this reality we're in. You know, we interpret everything from this vantage point. And you know, I always think about like the Matrix, where you have this system that's built around us, and we're jacked into the system to just observe or to experience what is around us, and or it will intermingle with other experiencers. It's like this is the experience that we're having now, but then when we die, we have an experience that's more real because that's the real realm, so to speak. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that there's a lot of truth to that. The I would point out that I believe that all of our soul work gets done here. People should not be under the kind of misunderstanding that a lot of soul work and progress and learning, teaching happens in those realms. Other than, for example, the life review. The life review is a beautiful way of showing kind of that connectedness and the importance of this realm. And that's one of the other reasons why understanding reincarnation is so important. Because if you limit yourselves with our kind of the orthodox Christian belief, for example, that only the material world exists to the point that that you somehow have to explain consciousness as being derivative from brain. That's not really what I'm talking about in terms of Christian ideology. But the Christian part is that one incarnation, then eternal heaven or hell, or nothing, if you believe nothing, you know, the materialist position. And yet, that's a very confusing way to look at life. And in fact, I would say that the biggest value of NDEs is instructing us in how to live this life, how to make choices more out of love for self and others, and not so much out of fear and kind of lack of abundance, which is what tends to be the dominant background of our culture and the materialism and the kind of thoughts that, you know, we're all in this in some competitive sense.
Yeah.
And I think Darwinian evolution is something we've come to a much richer understanding of. It was very polluted in the mid-20th century by scientists who tried to push this notion of survival of the fittest as if the only lesson from Darwinian evolution is that you need to out-eat and, you know, or eat, destroy your enemy to survive. And in fact, what biologists would tell you is the big lesson is that modern biology success stories all involve collaboration and cooperation, both between members of a species and even between species. For example, when you hear of dolphins serving as midwives in the birthing of whale calves, you know, all of a sudden we're seeing a much richer role of species helping each other out, which to me calls into question, you know, that we even label ourselves Homo sapiens. You know, sapiens meaning wise, when in fact, when you look at the dominant impact of our technology and existence on the world today, it's threatening everybody with extinction. About a third of the world's animal species are threatened with extinction due to our addiction to fossil fuels and climate change. That doesn't look very wise to me. So I think we need to kind of take a few steps back and get a much fresher kind of look at our consciousness and our free will. Remember that our materialist science would try and tell you that you don't have free will. That given that it's all chemical reactions and electron fluxes in the brain, that there's no such thing as free will. But I would just ask you to take a look at human history and tell me if that entire arc towards justice that you can see manifest in human history in so many ways and our growth in knowledge, is that all just due to the random chaotic collision of subatomic particles leading to some kind of bottom-up causality? I don't think so. To me, there seems to be a much more profound sense of a top-down causality, which in fact is something that rescues all of consciousness studies and quantum physics and philosophy of mind by leading us towards idealism, metaphysical idealism or objective idealism as the philosophical position that governs the workings of the universe. That's the position that Karen Newell and I argue in Living in a Mindful Universe, and that is something that's really coming to the fore in many, many groups around the world studying consciousness. And for your viewing audience, I would steer them to GalileoCommission.org. Check out that site. I'm one of the 100-plus scientific advisors in that group, and it is all about the science of consciousness. consciousness, which is showing us that our prior materialist notions of one incarnation, you know, brain creating consciousness, all of that is false. And we now are working on much bigger worldviews in the scientific community that allow for the reality not only of the afterlife and of near-death and shared death experiences, which occur in people who are physiologically normal and healthy, but they're just like NDEs. And I've encountered many, many people who have had shared death experiences that completely defy any simplistic materialist pseudo-explanation, like, you know, decreasing oxygen tension or increasing CO2 levels in the brain as you're dying. You know, shared death experiences are very profound, even to the point of witnessing a full-blown life review of a soul
together
in the physical plane. So we just need to expand our version of explaining consciousness and human experience.
You know, I will be the first to admit that I'm a skeptic by nature. There's so many things that I just feel like there's holes in certain philosophies. And, you know, this shared death experience concept, I really want to get in touch with some of those people. Because with my research, I mean, go ahead. I want to hear.
Yes, I'm going to tell you, you can do that instantly. You can reach out to William Peters of the Shared Crossing Project.
Oh, okay.
Santa Barbara, California. He's a hospice worker who has been involved in this field for a long time. He had his first kind of shared death experience way back in the 80s during the AIDS crisis. He was working with AIDS patients in the San Francisco Bay Area. And he was reading out of a book to a patient who was very actively in the process of dying when both of them found themselves bilocated up at the ceiling, looking down on themselves, reading the book to the other.
Oh my gosh.
And they're both there together going, oh my God, out of body together. So yes, shared death is an
incredible concept. I've heard people will cross over. Like, I don't remember the guy's name, but I listened to a near-death experience production where this guy basically, he fell asleep at the wheel and his wife and his son died in the crash. And his
with Jeff Olson.
Yes. So he was explaining how he had a shared death experience with his wife. And basically his wife was saying, you need to go back and take care of our son, the remaining son that was a survivor.
Yes.
And I mean, I'm getting tingles just thinking about it. It's like there's something more to a shared death experience that it defies science, you know, mainstream science as we know it.
It certainly defies materialism, but let's just say it's totally consistent with the emergent science of consciousness. I mean, the problem is to tackle something as gigantic as consciousness, which is the only thing any human being has ever known, is the inside of their own consciousness. It demands a multidisciplinary approach from all angles. And that's why even great physicists might not necessarily have anything to say about consciousness. For example, Stephen Hawking, he was a brilliant physicist, has a tremendous amount to say about information flow and black hole thermodynamics. But in his final book, when asked about it, does God exist, he's very confident saying, no, not based on my experience. I think he would give us a different version
now.
But I will promise you, there are many scientists. GalileoCommission.org is just the beginning. I'm on email lists with several groups of scientists around the world who study consciousness. And believe me, tremendous progress is being made. This world is on the verge of a tremendous wake-up call. I would say it'll make the Copernican Revolution, where we humanity started thinking that the Earth might not be the center of the universe, but maybe it was the sun. That will be a very minor change in our thinking compared to what I think is coming over the next decade or two in our awakening to the reality of consciousness as fundamental in the universe.
Yeah, consciousness was kind of the start of my pursuit after looking into near-death experiences initially. I started realizing that there is definitely something transcendent. And it's funny that you mentioned Stephen Hawking, because I had a clip of him in my first documentary that has almost like 250,000 views now, talking about consciousness. He was saying there is no God, and he takes comfort in that, basically. And to me, You know, God has a whole nother identity as far as like when I initially went into it. I don't necessarily look at God like a person. I look at God as a spiritual essence, I guess you could say.
Right.
But anyways, what were you were about to say?
I was just going to say that God is a force of pure love. But I would say, again, remember, what is it that comforts near-death experiencers? Why is it they come back to this world and they have no fear of death? It's because they have basked in that incredible ocean of pure love and oneness back in our spiritual home. It's very comforting. There's absolutely nothing to fear about it. But the crucial thing, unfortunately, you hear people that, especially if they still harbor that belief of one incarnation, then eternal heaven or hell, and they're having a miserable time in this life, they think, well, why not just kill myself? And then I'll just spend forever up there, you know, enjoying those beautiful heavenly realms that all these NDEers talk about. That's why it's so crucial for everybody to get reincarnations absolutely real. If you off yourself, you're dodging the problems. There's no way out but through. And if you do that and cannot make any kind of amends in the life review, the same kind of circumstances that might have led you to suicide in this life will be set up in that next life. So it never, ever is the correct decision. Homicide and suicide are violations of some fundamental principles of why we're even here and what the purpose of sentience throughout the cosmos is. So very crucial that people get the importance of this bigger picture and don't just think you're going to commit suicide and get out of a bad situation here forever. That's not the way it works. We have a responsibility for our choices and actions in this world. There's a tremendous sense of justice in the universe. That's why it's better to treat everyone as you would like to be treated all the time without exception.
You know, when you talk about like a consciousness collective, you know, you bring your minds together to kind of understand the bird's eye view better. Now, I often think of near-death experiences from a bird's eye view now, because I'm realizing that there's so many different perspectives. And I've actually interviewed people that have had hell experiences. And I've interviewed people that basically their interpretation of hell was actually their personal experience, because they needed to see hell in order to have a transformation when they came back.
Well, in a lot of those cases, it's simply a life review where if you've been busy handing out a lot of pain and suffering to others, that life review is not going to be a very pleasant thing because you'll be on the business end of all that. In fact, I think that all of our notions of hell came from life reviews that showed that we had not been you know, treating others as we would like to be treated. It's almost like that realm is very neutral on the issue, but given that in the life review, we have to experience how we've, you know, chosen to treat other people, you know, most of us would like to be treated kindly. And that's why the life review is just this beautiful arbiter and lesson that, well, then to go on and do it, treat others kindly. You know, don't forget this. We're responsible for our choices.
So what are your thoughts on like evil or deception or something that is beyond, like anything beyond this realm? Could we be influenced by deception beyond this realm? Do you know what I'm asking?
Well, I think there actually, you could say there's a fair amount of potential deception in those levels. For example, if I had just gone to the Earth Were My View, which is where I spent a tremendous part of time early on in my NDE, and then come back to this world, I would have had a hellish NDE. I think that in general, they're just kind of impartial, or they're partial. They're not a complete immersion in kind of process through the experience. So I don't believe there's an actual hell. I think it is, you know, and again, given this notion of reincarnation, of refinement, in improving kind of our soul growth over progressive incarnations, all towards that oneness with the divine, I think that there's a tremendous amount in the NDE community, and not just that, but through personal growth of many people through meditation, centering prayer, all the different ways that we can interact with those spiritual realms that show a very definite evolution of consciousness, just as Teilhard de Chardin talked about in his book, The Phenomenon of Man. And so in many ways, we're all contributing to this growth. It's kind of that higher soul is something that is shared. And it's shared not just among humans, but all life on Earth shares kind of this higher soul. And not just that, but sentience throughout the cosmos shares. So we're in part of a vaster kind of process of growth and evolution and becoming more of the universe that we all came here to be.
Well, Dr. Alexander, I actually, you're a wealth of knowledge when it comes to, you know, perspective on consciousness and the transcendent nature of our reality. And, you know, just the fact that some of the things that I'm going to have to look into now, you said William Peters, is that the
right.
gentleman's
shared
name?
Shared,
yeah. Santa yeah. And then, California. and then Galileo Commission.
Commission.org.
Yeah, so those are two things that I'm definitely going to look into more because, again, I'm not slowing down anytime soon as far as my research. I want to, you know, make documentaries about this, and I like the fact that I can collaborate with people such as yourself and Howard Storm and other, you know, well-known people in the community.
And one thing I can mention that you can also give to your listeners absolutely free is there's a 33-day email course on evanalexander.com. And if they go to evanalexander.com, there's a banner that wiggles in your face, your 33-day journey into the heart of consciousness, leave your first name and an email address, and then you'll join a community of more than 8,000 people from around the world who have taken that course. They leave their comments and experiences there, has a translate button so all different languages participate. But in that 33-day course, you get four sacred acoustics audio gifts, and this is all about growing through the concepts that are presented in our book Living in a Mindful Universe. And that 33-day course is a free companion workshop that goes along with the book, and I can highly recommend that to people. Share it with your friends. It's a fantastic way for people to get a lot of resources and get deeply involved in this awakening of humanity.
Yeah, wonderful information. And you know, I guess to kind of wrap things up, obviously, you're still pursuing your you know, unraveling of all the mysteries when it comes to all these things. But again, you've had us a few steps closer to understanding than any of us have. And to be honest with you, I love the fact that you're willing to, you know, slow down in your schedule enough to be part of what I have going on, and I very much appreciate that.
It's my pleasure, and I appreciate what you're doing to help get this awakening out to humanity. That's a very important role that you are playing with your listeners and your audience. So thank you very much for doing that.
Yeah, so, you know, since we're out of time now, I'm just going to go ahead and give you another minute or two to kind of close your thoughts, and then we'll call it a day.
I think the most important thing is, you know, we live in very troubled times, polarized times. There's political polarization. We now have this challenging coronavirus that is really threatening us like nothing has in many generations. And it's time to remember that we are connected to a greater good, and we have tremendous influence. Prayer and meditation, going within mind when you realize the power of the one mind and that we're all part of this one shared consciousness, you start gleaning information that can help. And one of our mottos is no soul left behind. Everyone is important in this. Really, no one is unimportant. Even your skepticism, you mentioned your skepticism earlier. Well, true open-minded skepticism is a great gift.
Yes.
In fact, it's something I've used tremendously over the last 11 years to separate the wheat from the chaff. And this is really how we grow. But do be open-minded so that you can pay attention and know that materialist science is not as great as it pretends to be. And we'll keep telling you, you know, it's all we have to do is study the brain more and we'll understand consciousness. Well, no, we need to understand consciousness. Then we'll understand much more about the brain. But consciousness is what comes first and generates all of it. And people can come to gain the tremendous healing power, for example, a placebo effect or profound near-death experiences, when they learn to go within and develop a relationship with that primordial mind that we all have access to through our own kind of limited human consciousness. But it's not so limited when we learn to traverse the filtering mechanism of the brain. And that is something that currently the tools of sacred acoustics and others offer us tremendous abilities to heal ourselves. And that's what this planet needs so badly right at this time.
Yeah, well, I hope my listeners will check out some of the resources that Dr. Alexander had to offer here. And again, I very much appreciate your time today. And maybe here down the road, I would love to have another opportunity to chat. But or if you ever make it to like a one of the NDE conferences, I'm actually considering going to the Utah one here pretty soon. But
good. Well, we were actually scheduled to go out to Sun Valley to talk this June, although I don't know if that's going to happen now with all the coronavirus.
That's a lot closer to me. I'm in Boise, Idaho. So
yeah, well, keep an eye on my website because I know Sun Valley. I've been there several times before. The Sun Valley Wellness Festival, and very excited and hope to be there. But you know, with coronavirus, we're not sure if June events will be on or not. We'll have to wait and see.
Wow, I'll have to check
everybody
that out.
Stay safe out there and wash your hands. Don't touch your face and social isolation at least for the next few weeks.
Yeah, you should have gotten toilet paper a while back, just saying.
Exactly. If you haven't, you're out of luck. Moss works great, I'm told.
Yeah, or get a bidet or something, yeah.
Exactly. All right, thank you so much, Charlie. Good talking with you.
Thank you, Mr. Alexander, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, sounds great. Bye-bye.
All right,